Hi, this is Jordan Moreno, and this is The Valley Now, your weekly feel-good hour where we lift each other up with the stories of good people doing good things in your neighborhood. Every week, we'll be talking with community leaders who have a unique passion for our thriving city and those that make The Valley such a special place to live. Get ready to be inspired by the work they're doing, whether it's mentoring our youth, providing a platform for those without one, or just driving those worthy charitable causes. Listen in on the conversations and join us in raising our community. This is our time to shine, and this is The Valley Now. All right, we've talked a lot about homelessness recently, and I feel like it's just so prevalent, but also such an issue that's misunderstood. So I'm really excited to chat with another leader in the space this week. His name is Jackson Fonder, and he's the CEO of UMOM, a wealth of knowledge. Good morning.
Good morning, Jordan.
Tell me about UMOM. You guys have been around for 60 years, and congratulations, because that's a big milestone.
It is. Yeah, this is our 60th anniversary. We are an organization that really focuses on ending family homelessness. And there's a lot to that. You know, we talk about restoring hope and rebuilding lives, but it's really, in a nutshell, we're the largest provider of services for families experiencing homelessness in the state of Arizona. And that includes this full slate of services, all the way from emergency shelter and wraparound services towards the end, which would be employment, workforce development training, and eventually affordable housing.
There are so many. You nailed it on the head that there's so many elements to family homelessness. And I feel like I'm extra passionate about it. I'm extra interested in it because that's kind of my background. Oh. Pre all of this, kind of my background. So I think that a lot of people don't even know necessarily the varying ways that someone can come into homelessness. And specifically, an interesting sector is family homelessness. It's not as visible as, you know, we talk about the point in time counts. It's really kind of this invisible population. Can you speak to family homelessness and kind of the oddities of it specifically?
It is a little odd because most of the optics around homelessness center on singles, and mostly, let's face it, single men. What I mean by that is I'd say 80% of us probably think about either movies or even reality of exiting a highway and coming to a light and who's standing there, most likely a single man. He's got a cardboard sign and he needs help. It's not very often you see a family of five on the corner. And that's why we refer to it as being invisible. But the real reason, there are a number of reasons, but the biggest reason that it's invisible is because families are afraid you're going to take their kids away from them. Mm-hmm. So they are hiding them. And that could be in their car, parked behind a Walmart, on somebody's couch, in a crummy hotel room. The list goes on.
Yeah. And when you think about the heat coming up, how is that even sustainable? Do you have any of those stats in terms of how long is someone living in a car or in a tent behind a church or kind of couch surfing even from one house to another? How long is that sustainable, or how long are families typically in kind of that cycle before they choose to reach out to someone like you, Mom?
Boy, that's a big question. How do you unpack that one? I'm going to answer that in two ways. I would say, because I've got an anecdote, I guess, because I talk to so many families that are moving out of UMOM, and let's start there.
So perfect. We can tackle all of them.
We've got these big blue bins. They're the size of a medium dining room table on wheels. It's a blue bin. Mm-hmm. And they're at UMOM. There's a few of them, and we only use them for two reasons. Families are moving in or they're moving out. And the difference in their body language and their facial expressions are remarkably different for obvious reasons. And whenever I see a family moving out, usually I'm heading home from work and it's the end of the day, and they might be at their car, their van, and I, every single time I swing by and ask them, that duh question, you moving out? And they say yes. And I say, tell me more. And they will tell me more. They will tell me, and I'll ask them also, how long were you on the streets for? What was your situation? How long were you at UMass? Where are you moving into? Tell me about your new job. How are the kids doing? And I just love those stories. But let's go back to the crux of the whole situation. And that is the fact that there's not enough emergency shelter in Phoenix to handle all the families who are experiencing homelessness. So if you come to UMass, which you are required to do if you're a family, and we're going to intake you, it's a weird name, and then we send you out to a shelter. That waiting list is about 8 weeks long and 250 to 300 families. So you take all their information, you ask them a lot of questions, you put them in the system, and then you got to send them back out on the streets. Oh, right. It's just terrible. So yeah, they might be in their Chevy Malibu and having to go live behind a Walmart for 7 weeks, 7 more weeks.
That's
And
a long time.
well, it is, whether it's 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, it's all too long living in a car, coupled in the front on the bucket seats. I want you to picture that for a moment. That's a reality. A child in the back seat, trunk being opened, and one child sleeping back there at night with the trunk open. But they do what they can. It's a matter of survival. And they move from campsite to campsite, or Walmart to Walmart, or truck stop to truck stop. And because you learn how to survive on the streets. So those statistics you're looking for the most part, are that wait list is 8 weeks, and that the number of families on that wait list total 250 to 300 families.
And I think it is important to point out that you are the central hub.
We
You
are.
are the one that is kind of designating, because last week I spoke with Cass, and they have their kind of area of expertise in the space. You have your area of expertise in the space, but it really does take all of these organizations to tackle the different sectors of homelessness, whether it's an individual, whether it's families, whether it's seniors. That was another group that we talked about that was you wouldn't initially think of when you think of homelessness. And so I, for one, am happy to kind of see everyone coming together and putting the little pieces of the pie together in their respective areas and playing in the same sandbox, honestly.
That's a great point. I would say one of the things we do well as a community is work together. We are a bunch of collaborating do-gooders, and that's a good thing. People at CAS and A New Leaf and Catholic Charities and St. Vincent de Paul and Salvation Army, the list goes on and on. We work together. We make a lot of phone calls. We coordinate things. Here's the problem, though, as you might think about the topic of homelessness, it's almost not a fair term because it's so broad. Think about it like a gigantic Gulf umbrella. It's huge. And the overarching title across the umbrella just says homelessness, but underneath it are all of these issues, from domestic violence and drug addiction and overcoming medical bills, losing a job. There's so many pieces that cause it or contribute to it. And it's hard to talk about because you have a lot of different people in the space. It's like a huge puzzle with a lot of pieces.
Yeah, there's no one size fits all.
No silver bullet. We have to be in it together. No one organization can do this.
Explain UMOM's method when it comes to emergency shelter, because you include kind of those wraparound services in your emergency shelter. And I think a lot of the times those extra services are not included. They're more included in something that's more of a long-term stay or transitional housing. So explain the impact of including the wraparound services and even emergency shelter.
Sure. So we've got about 150 rooms. We're in a 1959 Days Inn. We can talk about that later. I bet back in 1959 it was a pretty cool place, but it needs a little love and attention, but it provides a safe and secure environment to get off the streets. That's the first thing to think about. Some dignified response. I'm no longer living in my car, and I'm living in a room that's got its own bathroom, and I've got privacy, and I've got safety, and I've got 3 meals a day. But what I've got is the right business model. What I've got, if it's me and my family and we're experiencing homelessness, I've got a case manager, and he or she knows me inside and out. And the clock starts ticking, by the way, as soon as I get there, because we'd like you out in less than 120 days. The average stay is about 90 days. That means we're going to work very closely with you to find a job and find affordable housing. And we're constantly talking about it because the whole organization is designed around a very simple formula that jobs plus housing are what end homelessness. Nothing else. Everything else is cherries on the sundae. And it's a delicate balance, Jordan, of pushing you hard enough, fast enough to make decisions. And because we walk alongside of you, we don't do it for you. And yet, not pushing you too hard and offering the love and empathy and support that you need because you're going through a level of trauma that most of us can't explain or don't really understand. So
Do you feel
that,
like that changes from person to person?
oh my goodness, it's
That
very,
balance?
yes, it does. Some people love to be pushed and some people don't. Some people are ready. Even their situation, their homelessness situation is different from person to person. Somebody may have just lost a job and they need to get back on the horse and get back out there. And some folks, oh my goodness, they're on the run from an abuser. They maybe have never had a job. She's got the kids for the first time ever by herself, and she's on the run, and everything in between. Because a lot of folks also come to us with jobs. But because of this weird real estate market that we've watched around COVID and post-COVID, rent prices have gone up, the cost of real estate has skyrocketed, but wages have remained relatively stable. So it's hard on a lot of families. So every plan that we put together for a family is customized to their situation. And each case manager works with about a dozen families or so at a time. That span of control allows each case manager to give enough attention to every single family.
Are they there long enough to see changes in the kids too?
Yeah, at any given time, you bring up another good point. We've got 300 kiddos on our campus. All of them go to school if they're school eligible. Buses arrive early in the morning, and then all Hades breaks loose in the
Yeah,
afternoon.
it's a loud period of the
It's
day.
loud. Yeah. But the kids have their own level of trauma that they bring to the table. And you just want to try to, even though it sounds crazy when I say this statement out loud, you want them to be sort of normal or have a normal childhood, even though they've experienced things that most children have never experienced in their lives. So anything you can do around school and food, and even the on-site Boys and Girls Club is very rare around the United States on a homeless shelter. And we have this fantastic partnership with the Boys and Girls Club where we have a full-blown program. So while mom or dad are searching for a job or housing, we've got them after school and into the early evening with full family and children programs. It's a phenomenal way to keep the kids and coach the kids and just lead the kids. It's I love that partnership on site.
That's an awesome partnership. And knowing that they are on site and they are safe and they're not out roaming doing whatever, and they're in a safe place to be able to
Yes.
kind of take that break and to let their own guards down, because I'm sure those kids as young as 5, 6 years old are aware of the situation and aware of starting to put their walls up and starting to feel as if they have to defend themselves 24/7, some of them.
I would tell you this, when I first started at U Mom, I appreciated the partnership with the Boys and Girls Club from a different level, I guess. I looked over there and saw the kids and saw the program, and I thought, well, I mean, it makes sense to me logically. It's pretty cool. And then I got invited to a arts program where they had put the kids through about a 4 or 6 week program with another nonprofit, an arts nonprofit that came on site to teach the kids, and the kids had to put together an art project and then talk to a small audience, mostly employees and family members, about their feelings about their lives. And so I went because, I'm the boss. That's what you do. You go over there and you listen in. I grabbed a chair and I was not prepared for the emotional roller coaster of the next 90 minutes, listening to each child stand up and tell you about their experiences through art form. And it was moving. I'll never forget it.
And the courage of someone so small. Public speaking is scary for almost everyone.
It
So for
is.
them to get up and share their story and their truth, that's awesome.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. I took away a couple of things I didn't have before that session. That was nice.
I know you all are very proud of your outcomes. Do you want to share some of those and the way that it's impacting Arizonans?
I mean, we're measurement freaks, data people.
It's a good thing.
You move the needle by measuring, right? And we bump ourselves up against national averages all the time. Monthly, quarterly, annually, and we've got our own data department. There are a lot of metrics. I won't bore you with all of them, 39 to be exact, that we follow closely, but there are a couple that lead the way, that if those two aren't the leading metrics or indicators, then you're in trouble. And that is 80% of our families leave U Mom with affordable housing and with employment.
That's a great number.
You got to work really hard to get to that number, those numbers, and in many cases across the board, no matter what the demographic, we beat the national average hands down. And I attribute that to being around really smart people. We've got just a tremendous staff that are passionate about this work. This is not normal work. Okay. This
No.
is, you know what? You want to work at a bank or a mortgage company or anything like that. Those are great jobs. It's great work. This is different. You're talking about human lives and working with people who are extremely vulnerable and experiencing that trauma that I talked about earlier. And I think you have to be wired a little differently to want to do this full time.
Yeah, you
And
do.
we've got that. We've got about 140 employees, and we've got folks that have been with us a long time. I just really admire what they bring to the table. And we've got to work with them to take care of themselves, and we've got to take care of them so they don't burn out either.
Right. There's no on and off. And I feel like you start seeing the world differently when you are in that environment day in and day out. You're getting to know the families, you know the kids' names, you know all the stories. You leave work, you hop in your car and you leave, and you see the city differently. You see the underpasses differently. You see a car parked in a parking lot differently. You just never know what's happening out there. And I think you just become hyper aware to it. So yeah, there's no on, there's no off. So that's really awesome that you're in a leadership position that you recognize that burnout could happen very easily.
Yeah, it does happen. And you got to work like crazy. You know, I kind of call it the Toyota Camry effect. Many years ago, I bought a Camry, bought a Toyota for the first time, and you have one. I don't care what kind of car you got. I just making up a Toyota Camry. And then I owned one. And then I started seeing them everywhere. It changed. Yep. Oh my gosh, I didn't know there were that many Camrys out there. I don't know if you've ever bought a car. Then you start to see that car all the time.
Or you think about buying the car.
And yes.
Then, yes.
When you're in this line of work, you said it best, right? Now you look at underpasses. You look, in between alleyways. You look, you're pulling into a Walmart or a truck stop for gas on a trip, and you can tell there are telltale signs of a car that's packed with too many things. Doesn't look like a cross-country road trip. Looks more like their home.
Right. Exactly. Home things, not just clothes.
Yes.
What drew you into this space? What's your background?
I'm a retired Air Force guy. You know, I served for 22 years, and then I moved over to the corporate world and worked with a wonderful company called USAA. I helped bring USAA to Phoenix many years ago, and I retired from there. And through those two efforts, I had opportunities to work with the community a lot, whether it was on a board or whether it was as a volunteer. And my wife suggested I
so kindly, I'm sure.
Yes, you should look at that, and I did. And so I went up to Wisconsin with my wife and kids. That's where I'm from, and we did about 10 years of nonprofit work up there that I really enjoyed. And it was a smattering of all kinds of things because it was a really large organization. But the piece of it I liked the most was around family poverty, family homelessness. Just energizes me. I'm a dad, got kids, and I'm at the end of my career, not at the beginning of my career. So I've seen a lot of things and a lot of worldwide travel. And it just really appeals to me. I felt like I could make a difference. And here I am, and I'm lucky to work alongside of these people.
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of brings an interesting perspective to it too, having a nonprofit background, but also USAA and just kind of bringing it all together of more worldly, like you said.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, in a celebration of 60 years, that's a lot that the organization has tackled. There's a lot that you're currently tackling. What are some of the biggest projects that are on the horizon for you?
Well, a couple that are right in front of us right now, and I briefly mentioned it earlier, is the love and attention that our campus needs. We sit on 7.5 acres in a 1959 Days Inn, and there are two other hotels, kind of one of those very skinny single strip motels.
Yeah. I can picture it.
Eight. Yeah. So one on each side of the Days Inn. And we have a 3-year project where we are methodically going through all 150 rooms and renovating every single one.
It's a big undertaking.
It is. So we're about 1.5 years into it, and we're about halfway done. I want to say that we've got about 75, 80 rooms done. And those two single strip motels are being done at the same time as we speak. Both of them will be done in the next 60 days. And it's not just renovations, which were sorely needed, but also adding capacity. Mm-hmm. And that is because we think we can bring in more families and help more families. And then the last thing that's a piece of that also, which is a very interesting development, is through COVID, a lot of families co-joined, if you will, together to either save money or to take care of each other. And then coming out of COVID, we had that eviction moratorium where landlords could not evict folks. And then they lifted that moratorium. So that means folks fell through the cracks faster. Well, you know who fell through the cracks quite a bit were these families that came together during COVID. So they fell out together. So what we're seeing are multi-generational families coming to UMUM and larger families. So the size of the family has changed. It's gone from three, four, five people in the family to six, seven, eight. Might
That's a big
include grandma
change.
and grandpa. And our shelters in Maricopa County can't handle that kind of size. You're talking about a 1959 Days Inn room.
Right, a hotel room.
So as we're going through all of these renovations, we're knocking down walls and adding capacity to accommodate larger families. So we've built out at least 30 of these rooms now that can handle up to nine family members, which is awesome. And I love it. And we're the only nonprofit in Maricopa County that can handle that size. And I'm really proud of the work that our folks are doing in that area. Now, we have a long way to go, but it's exciting. It's a 3-year effort. And that's a part of this 60th anniversary thing where you recognize that if we want to be around for another 60, God forbid, of homelessness that lasts that long, you've got to take care of your facilities and constantly look at upgrading and adding the level of dignity that these families deserve.
Because that's a big piece of it too, the confidence, the dignity that these are humans and that you don't want to be in a cockroach infested, worried about the blankets your kids are using. No, it needs to be something that you would want to sleep in yourself. And so hats off to you all for that's a huge undertaking and interesting shift in the population too, because then it's I'm curious to see how that's going to shift the numbers too, because let's say there's nine folks living in one apartment that they get evicted. That's one apartment eviction, but nine people then on
That
the
is
street. So
correct.
that's
And
interesting.
now, instead of maybe having one earner, if you will, with a job, you might have three in there that the case manager is trying to help.
Yeah, I
So
didn't think
imagine
about that
that.
element too.
So it puts a little more pressure on the folks that are doing the greatest level of work.
Yeah. Do you have quite a few partnerships in terms of employment?
We do. We have a standalone workforce development center, a lot of computers in there, computer training and interviewing, and we help them with resumes. We bring in those employers to talk to our participants. We also have job fairs, and they're not just any job fairs. They're job fairs where employers are really intentionally looking to come in to hire our folks. It's not just for show. Not uncommon to have a half a dozen people hired out of a job fair here. So we rely on some of those employers. So if there are employers out there that might be interested in working with UMOM, we would love that.
Awesome. That's great work. If there's one piece that listeners take away today, what would that item be that you want folks to know about or have a better understanding of?
We actually believe family homelessness is solvable.
That's
Yeah.
bold.
Chronic homelessness is another story. I'm not touching that. I work with that population too, and it's very difficult. I'll be the first to tell you how hard it is. Family homelessness, we believe, is solvable, but it requires a lot of hands, whether people want to get involved, volunteering, putting together move out kits, move in kits, employers who want to hire our folks, landlords who have space available that would be willing to work with us and our participants. You have enough hands on this effort, we can get that done.
And what is your website where I'm assuming that's the best place if folks want to come volunteer or donate or get involved? It's the
It is.
website.
Everything's at umom.org, umom.org.
Perfect. Well, Jackson, thank you so much. And thank you for the work in the community. It's big time stuff.
Thanks, Jordan.
All right, I want to give a very special thank you to my guest today, and I want to thank you for being a part of the program and making our community an amazing place, not just to live and to work, but most importantly, to play. You can hear The Valley Now on the radio with audio on demand on radio station websites and the Odyssey app. My name is Jordan Moreno. Shine your light, share your love, and join us again next week right here on The Valley Now.